Welcome everyone to the November 3rd, 2021 Board of Forestry virtual meeting. We are live streaming this meeting on YouTube, and to make sure our viewers online can follow along with today's meeting, I'll go over some housekeeping tips to keep us on track. Everyone participating or presenting, please silence cell phones and limit background noises. Remember to use the mute feature when you are not speaking and disable your video when not presenting or part of the discussion. For the record, we ask all presenters, public members, and board members to state their name for those listening online. If you experience any technical issues, don't hesitate to use the chat function on Zoom to connect with our ODF support team in Salem during the meeting. For those joining us online, I'll remind everyone of our general order of operations. After an item is introduced, I will invite the presenters to begin. For board members, if you have clarifying questions, please use the raise hand function and I'll call on you. Presenters, we will do our best to ask questions one at a time. After a presentation, we will open up the floor for board discussion and additional questions. We will continue to offer real-time public testimony under item 1 and 9. Where the public can comment on items on and off the agenda. At the end of board comments, we'll begin the public comment period. Commenters will have 2 minutes to offer testimony. We have one decision item in front of the board today, item number 8, Department of Forestry, Climate Change, and Carbon Plan. Live public comment will also be offered for this comment, for this item. General order of operation. Well, following the staff presentation, the board will hear from the public who signed up to provide comment. Board members can ask follow-up questions from the presenters before the board sets forth a motion and discusses. We will use a roundtable approach for the voting process, which has seemed to work well in our previous meetings. Additionally, members of the public, we ask that if you would like to submit written testimony for this meeting's agenda items and enter it into the record, please send in your comments by November 17th. This will help in the preparation of our board's meeting minutes. I just want to mention that this is a very busy day. We've got a lot of folks who want to testify. Please, everyone, be as brief as possible so we can get through this and not be going home at 9 p.m. tonight. Any questions? If none, then I will perform a roll call to confirm a quorum can be met for today's items. Carla Chambers?
Here.
Ben Doimling?
Here.
Chandra Ferrari?
Here.
Joe Justice? Joe is not with us. Brenda McComb?
Here.
And I, Jim Kelly, am also present. Okay, I'm going to move right on to the consent agenda items. Do I have a motion to accept consent items A through E?
I would so move.
I second.
Carla Chambers has moved and Ben Doimling has second. That, okay, in that case, I will ask for a vote. Okay, Carla Chambers?
Aye.
Ben Doimling?
Aye.
Chandra Ferrari?
Aye.
Brenda McComb?
Aye.
And I am an aye myself as well. With consensus by the board, the motion carries. And now moving on to item 1, Acting State Forester, Board Member, and Public Comment. Nancy, can you start us off today, please?
Sure. Good morning, Chair Kelly, members of the board. I'm Nancy Hirsch. I'm the acting state forester. I've got a couple of topic areas I want to cover, given this is likely my last board meeting. The first one is about progress and accomplishments, and the last one is related to appreciations. These two topics are really interdependent for me. But first, I wanted to say I'm extremely pleased with the board's selection of Cal Mukamoto as the new state forester. Cal is the right person at the right time to provide leadership I believe the board is expecting and that I know the department needs. I was fortunate in my career to work with Cal while he served on the Board of Forestry. More recently, I've had Cal working with me providing some additional oversight on the MGO recommendations that are being implemented, including some critical financial reporting and change management efforts. Cal brings a diverse professional background in forestry, and he has excellent relationships with many of our partners, stakeholders, and Oregon's federally recognized tribes. The department is excited about working with Cal, and we stand behind him in moving forward. Congratulations, Jim, board members, and Cal. I look forward to helping however I can in the transition. Touching on some accomplishments, as I've been planning for the transition with Cal, I've had a lot of thought about the progress the department has made and our accomplishments over the last 5 months. And there's a number worth highlighting as well as celebrating. When I started in June, it was really crystal clear to me where we had alignment on issues and opportunities, which resulted in a number of top priorities, but also competing priorities over the past 5 months. My priorities have been employee health and wellness, regaining the trust of key external partners, continuing to implement the MGO recommendations, fire season 2021, and righting the ship while keeping up with core business and initiatives. They've not changed, except for adding one with the implementation of Senate Bill 762. As I've said before, surrounding employee health and well-being, the bills that came out of the legislative session did bring with them much needed capacity that will begin to help mitigate the impact and demand on our most important asset, our employees. But it will take time to fully realize those benefits. We're fortunate that we have received these investments, and they must be sustainable. Surrounding regaining trust, I've primarily focused on building and sustaining relationships with each of you as board members, the governor's office and her staff, the state treasurer and his staff, and key legislative leaders. All were significantly engaged, interested, and supportive. We were able to shift from multiple financial reporting efforts to a single monthly report that seems to be serving everyone well. This is an important step towards bringing confidence and trust into the agency's finances. We need this trust to be successful in developing a large fire funding fix, and I'm confident in where we are at today. Continuing to implement the MGO recommendations and complete that work on time, another priority. In June, the department presented the implementation management plan to the board. One recommendation included organizational changes that need to go into effect by January 1. We recently procured contracts with MGO and a change management consultant that are critical to achieving this, and it is in the implementation phase and on schedule. The oversight Cal has been providing to these efforts will be incredibly beneficial to the continuity around this critical work. Fire season 2021, there were simply heroic responses at every level, from initial attack to extended attack to large fire management, yet during another extremely challenging fire season. Just a special note there, we bring on almost 600 seasonals that take care of that initial attack. And we had amazing success surrounding Oregon in extended attack, though most of you probably only saw the challenges and the successes around large fire. The department sent out all three of its incident management teams within a week in July. That was unheard of prior to 2013. Logistically alone, this is a major accomplishment. The new fire environment driven by climate change is not yet well understood by many. Exponential fire growth is difficult to operate in. Right the ship while keeping up with core business and initiatives. We've continued to focus on the top priorities while striving to maintain core business. The climate change and carbon plan, as already mentioned, is in front of you today for a decision. The state forest habitat conservation plan continues with significant workload, now on a companion draft forest management plan. And now with the agreement on the private forest accord, clarity will evolve quickly on what the rulemaking and operational workloads will be for the department and the board. The accord triggers yet another transformational period for the department. That shortly after the other transformational accomplishment, which for all of us was Senate Bill 762, which was added after the as a priority after the 2021 legislative session. There's a newly established Wildfire Programs Advisory Council. This new council is not a decision body, but instead was established to provide advice, assistance, perspective, and ideas, as well as recommendations to the state wildfire programs director, which we all know our own Doug Graff recently was appointed there. The council will hold its first meeting on Friday. We will be in attendance to report on the significant progress made by the Board of Forestry in its rulemaking and ODF in its implementation. The wildland urban interface rule or definition rule was recently adopted by the board within the 100 days of legislation passing as required, which was a significant lift by the Rule Advisory Committee, board, and the department. There's a lot of work happening to establish criteria for awarding $20 million in mitigation that we received and standing up the small woodland grant program, which was given $5 million. That's quite a mouthful. Folks have been busy around here, and I know all of you have too. On that note, I want to shift to some appreciations. It takes a lot of support to be sustainable and make progress on important initiatives in the department and for the state forester. I'm sincerely grateful. I'm in complete gratitude to have had the opportunity to lend a hand here over the past few months. To be honest, it does feel a lot longer than 5 months. Consistent with my career to date, it's been about relationships, and those relationships fill me up. Jim, you and every board member have shown tremendous support during my time, and I want to thank you personally. I have needed your support, and you and others have been there for me every time. I'm sincerely grateful to the public, partners, and stakeholders that have shown a great deal of patience, support, grace, and understanding during my acting role. How you have treated me goes a long way in making this job doable. I'm hopeful you offer Cal the same in his transition. It makes a difference. For the department's executive team, you've shown tremendous courage and response. I know I've asked a lot, and you've responded with action and grace. Honestly, more grace than I have most of the time. Thank you for your support, leadership, and steady hands. You're in good hands with Cal going forward, and he is in good hands with you. I want to call out the ODF's Tricia Kershaw, the HR director, and Joy Krozik, the public affairs director, for their constant, critical, strategic, proactive problem-solving and coordinated communication efforts. This has not been an easy period for anyone, and these two have been instrumental in our success on every challenge we've faced. Thank you, Tricia and Joy. You've made a difference. I also brought in additional capacity in a specific area during this time. Bill Hunt, an ODF retiree as a senior advisor, served the executive team and board in specific strategic support and provided me with critical counsel. I cannot thank Bill enough for saying yes and for being here with me. Bill and I will have quite a debrief when I get done here, which we often do in a dugout. For the department's leadership team, thank you for your leadership across Oregon. Your work is where the rubber meets the road. It's what matters. Over the past 6 months, you've provided leadership during the second most expensive gross cost fire season of $129 million and the most expensive net cost fire season, nearly $69 million. These costs result from real work, putting large fires out associated with thousands of acres burned in extreme fire behavior and fuel and health conditions. All of this while managing large fires with COVID protocols, maintaining core business functions across all programs, and ultimately carefully managing additional chaos and challenges through the implementation of the executive order. You thrived and you survived. And I know you will move the organization forward in a way to continue to deliver services expected. To all ODF employees, thank you really isn't enough. I regret that during this period, I was not able to connect with very many of you in person. For those I did, some seasoned and some very new, I observed to the person the dedication and commitment necessary to continue to deliver at every level. Thank you for those that provided me feedback throughout this time, your voices do matter. Keep focused on the agency's mission and providing so many valuable services to Oregonians. Lastly, thank you to Governor Brown and her staff, Department of Administrative Services, our Chief Financial Office, and other agency directors, both federal and state, some key legislative leaders, our legislative fiscal officer, the state treasurer and his staff in the Department of Justice. Unfortunately, a lot of help from the Department of Justice during my time, but I've needed it and all of that every step of the way. Overall, I remain extremely proud to be a part of the department. I want to just say thank you for the opportunity to serve during this transitional period. Back to you, Jim.
Okay, Nancy, we cannot thank you enough. So thank you on behalf of the board. Thank you on behalf of all Oregonians. You've taught me a lot, and it's been a joy to work together. So next up, big congratulations to Cal Mukamoto. I believe that all of ODF is excited to welcome Cal. And meanwhile, we can celebrate that Nancy will soon have a real life again. And we can also celebrate that she will be back around from time to time to help with projects. Cal, at this point, do you have any wisdom to share with us this morning?
Chair Kelly, unfortunately, Mr. Mukamoto is not able to join us currently.
Oh, okay. Great. Thanks for letting me know. All right, back to business. I do want to point out that there will be no annual performance review for the state forester in 2021 for obvious reasons. Also, I would like to honor Carla Chambers, who together with her husband just received a Dean's Alumni Legacy Award from OSU. It's an award that acknowledges a career lifetime of achievement. It recognizes that they have made a lasting and meritorious contribution to Oregon agriculture. And that's as anyone who knows anything about Stallbush Island Farm can attest. Congratulations, Carla.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You're welcome. Meanwhile, on that very same Friday that we nominated Cal, a historic agreement was reached, the Private Forest Accord. This is a result of a tremendous effort by private forestry owners, conservation leaders, and fishing organizations that came together to propose new protections for sensitive species in over 10 million acres of forest land in Oregon. This is such a momentous achievement. I want to formally thank the many, many people and organizations who dedicated themselves to making this happen. This is a long list, but I think the length of the list gives us all a flavor of what a complex and daunting task it has been to get to where we are today. The conservation representatives were Bob Van Dyke from Wild Salmon Center, Sean Stevens from Oregon Wild, Kristen Lambert from Trout Unlimited, Bob Salinger from Portland Audubon, Joseph Vail from the Klamath Siskiyou Wildlands Center, and Dr. Kelly Burnett, who is an aquatic scientist. For the timber sector, the representatives were Adrian Miller from Rayonier, Diane Myers from Weyerhaeuser, Cameron Krause from Seneca Sawmill Company, Heath Curtis of Hampton Lumber, Eric Geyer from Roseburg Forest Products, and Jim James from the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. Attorney Dave Bechtold led their team. Peter Curler led the mediation with the help of Peter Harkema. Many others helped. Kayola Swanson of Sustainable Northwest, Mike Barnes and Mike Barsotti of the Oregon Small Woodlands Association, Dave Bergvall of Hancock, all participated. Kyle Abram led the team from ODF with the help of Ryan Gordon, Keith Baldwin, Thomas Whittington, Adam Coble, and John Hawksworth. DEQ's team included Jennifer Weigel, Gene Forrester, Josh Seeds, and Ryan Michie. ODFW's team included Sean Clements, Kara Onlop Dunn, Courtney Zambori, John Gurman, Alan Ritchie, John Bowers, Craig Smith, Derek Brauman, and Thomas Stahl. From NOAA, we had Kim Krotz, Terry O'Rourke, Jeff Young, and Tim Beachy. And from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, we had Paul Henson and Rich Flint. I understand a big shout out is also due to Courtney Linebaugh, the executive assistant to Jason Miner, who supported the teams all last week, including making copies of proposals drawn on napkins in the final hours. Apparently she got there early and she left late. So I apologize for anyone who has been left out. That leaves me with just two others that I'm told deserve a little credit. Jason Miner from the governor's office and the governor herself, Kate Brown. People on both sides tell me that the agreement would never have been reached without the governor's shuttle diplomacy. And I can imagine just a bit of arm twisting. This is a historic achievement that will truly be a positive and lasting legacy and will benefit Oregon for at least the next 50 years. Congratulations to all of you. With that, we do have a tight schedule, but we would love to hear a few words from those involved. I think Bob Van Dyke is with us. I hope Sean Stevens has come on, and I know David Bechtold is here at this point. And I'm not sure if Jason is on yet either, but Bob, do you have anything to say?
Well, first I'd say thank you, Chair Kelly, for those remarks. It was a real privilege for me to be part of this. And obviously there's a real big team on our side that goes well beyond those names you mentioned. I guess the last thing I'd say to the board members and the department and really everybody here is that we're going to need some help. We're going to need some help from here. We're going to need some help to get this passed in the legislature. We're going to need to help to draft it and to get it ready to pass. We're going to need help to pass in the legislature. And then we're going to need help to implement it over time, which will be a matter of years. So thanks for the opportunity to speak today, and I look forward to continue working with all of you. Thanks, Chair Kelly.
Okay, thank you, Bob. David, anything to say?
Thank you, Chair Kelly. I would love to echo the thanks that you sent out to everybody involved. And as Bob said, probably hundreds more people could be named. Also would like to say thank you to you as the board. You didn't thank yourselves, but providing the space for us to do something that was truly historic. Thank you is deserved to you as well. And as Bob said, we will be looking to you to play an important role moving this forward. A lot has been accomplished. The job isn't done, and we will be hopefully working hand to hand together to move this forward and truly realize on the potential of this agreement. You know, it's been said a lot in the media about how historic this moment is. And I just want to highlight that as far as I'm aware, conservation agreement of this side has never been reached in such an acrimonious fashion, where both Bob's coalition, the environmental organizations, and the industry have come together in a unified agreement to move forward with the plan. And that truly is historic. I'd be remiss not to highlight that it's going to cost industry a lot, and it is a big pill for us to swallow, but we're excited about the possibilities in the future and truly a historic game-changing event. So thank you to you. Personal thank you to you again, Bob. I know we spent a whole lot of time together over the past 2 years, and feels good to get to a finish line, but one finish line is another start line. So looking forward to working together.
Yeah, thanks, David, and more to come.
David, I think we really, the board understands it was a big pill to swallow, an expensive pill. And so we really want to congratulate industry for getting to this place. Has Sean Stevens joined us? Sean, are you there?
Chair Kelly, I'm here, and I won't belabor much other than to, I think, really underline, given the audience here, just how supportive, helpful, straightforward, a real servant of the state I found Kyle Abraham to be. Credit to the department. So wanted to reflect that to you all, but I'll just echo what Bob and David said, and thank you all.
Yeah, one thing that's impressed me through it all is that you were all sworn to secrecy, and so you guys really held to it. We couldn't get any intelligence going along even when we tried. So Jason, are you there? Can we get few words from you.
Yeah, Chair Kelly, thanks. I am here, and thanks to the board. I echo everything that's been said. I do want to hearken back and thank the individuals who came together in February of 2020 to sign the MOU that in many ways kicked off this process. And I think a special thank you goes out to the Oregon legislature. It was Senate President Peter Courtney brought SB 1602. And it was really, I think, the only policy bill to pass in the first special session of the 2020 legislature in June. And that really set in place the authority of the governor's office to bring the facilitation capacity to fund the effort that launched this year of incredibly hard work, which culminated in a week of incredibly hard work that ended in the early morning hours of Saturday with success. So the legislature has played an important role here in launching this and charging these parties to get together, find a better way forward, and bring that back. And here we are, as everybody has acknowledged, there is a lot of work ahead, but I want to extend the governor's thanks to the legislature for making this moment possible. And thank you, as has been said, I think, by both parties, the space that both the board and the legislature afforded for these groups to come together and strike a historic agreement is what made this possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. I think as all the board members are clearly aware, this will make our jobs so much easier. None of us relish the regulatory responsibility that we have. And to it's just such a healthier process to have everyone coming to agreement rather than us pass some new piece of regulation that half the world will despise. So and none of us will have any reasons to go out shopping for bulletproof vests, I think, in the near future. So thanks to all of you. Board members, comments, thoughts, questions?
Chair Kelly, I apologize for being late. A little bit of little problems with me this morning, but I'm here. So good morning, everyone. I would just make a comment. I would thank everybody involved. This is being part of industry and seeing this happen, this historic process is just so encouraging about Oregon. And I'm so hopeful and optimistic about the future. It is, you know, as David said, it is a big pill to swallow. This is big. But that regulatory certainty for us is very important too. So thank you for everybody involved. I really appreciate the hard work.
For the record, this is Brenda McComb. I just want to congratulate all parties involved in reaching this agreement and hope that it sets a trajectory for future work together to solve future problems that might arise. So thank you all.
Any other comments this morning, board members? Okay, if not, we are doing well here. We will we'll move on to the public comments. All right, thanks to all of you who signed up to provide testimony to the board. We ask that everyone in the Zoom queue to not exceed their allotted time of 2 minutes. I ask that before you start that you state your full name, the topic you are commenting on, an associated affiliation, if you have one. And a timer will be provided to track your time, and each commenter will be called on by the board administrator. With limited time available, anyone who exceeds their time will be prompted to provide a closing statement and muted. Just so you understand, we've got everybody limited to 2 minutes. It's that's unusual for us. We usually try to do 3 minutes. We apologize. We're just trying to accommodate as we had a lot of interest for comments today, and we're trying to accommodate as many as possible. So, Hillary, are we ready to engage with public comment?
We are, Chair Kelly, but I would like to just inform the board that Mr. Mokomoto has joined us now. So I'm going to check in with you to see if you'd like to have him provide a few comments before we enter into public comment.
That'd be great. Cal, have you got any wisdom this morning to share with all of us? You're muted, Cal.
I apologize for being late, Chair Kelly. I just found out about the meeting about 5 minutes ago. So I had my calendar 9 o'clock, but I don't know what happened. Anyway, through technology, we were able to get on, and this is a very exciting week. I think right now we're looking at probably, I'm jumping on probably about the 15th of the month, but still waiting for some paperwork from the state to see, to actually know that I have a confirmed offer. So, but I'm looking forward. I've been talking to people. I met with the executive team on Monday morning. What a great bunch we have. And then with this private forest accord, it's very exciting time to be here. So thank you very much, Chair Kelly.
Okay. Thank you, Cal. We really appreciate your being here. All right. Then it's back to you, Hillary, for public comment.
Thank you, Board Chair and members of the board. Today, we have 7 in the queue who've signed up to provide public testimony today. So everyone in the queue, thank you for joining us. To ensure we stay on track, I will list the names in a set order and call on each of you to begin your testimony. You will be unmuted for your comment portion and muted upon conclusion of your comments. When you begin, a timer will be presented for a duration of 2 minutes. When you see the timer run out, we just ask that you provide your closing comment. So today, with the 7, I will list them out in order and then call on the first to begin. In the order of Ron Byers, Sam Krupp, Lisa Arkin, Jenna Travers, Joseph Yoren, and Lauren Anderson. Up first, Mr. Byers, please provide me a moment to transition into sharing a timer.
Chair Kelly, members of the board, hello again. I'm Ron Byers from North Coast Communities for Watershed Protection, talking to you again about drinking water. ODF staff tell us that only the board can weigh and prioritize among the various ODF goals. Currently, we can't tell if our water sources from state forest lands are more important than the timber sales from these watersheds. Past experience tells us that timber sales are your top priority. We must change that in the watersheds we rely on if our communities are to survive drier times. It's not just about water quality any longer, it's about quantity as well. As you know, the vast majority of the state forest lands you manage are in Clatsop and Tillamook State Forest. Much of our water comes from these forests, which is why we keep pleading for more recognition of our water crisis. Less rainfall during months of high need, more demand, increasing numbers visit our beaches, and clear-cut forests releasing less and less water when we need it the most, all contribute to this water crisis. Right now, you can't do much about summer rainfall or about increase in demand, but you can do something to protect the quality and quantity of water flowing from state water forests. What can you do? You can elevate water, and especially drinking water, to an overarching priority goal that applies to all ODF divisions, and you can redirect agency resources accordingly. This is the only way this goal can get into the necessary operating plans and become strategies with timeframes and measurable results. You can launch efforts specifically to inventory where state forest lands contribute to water supplies of neighboring communities to include spring boxes, wells, and municipal water systems, and then plan accordingly. You can achieve compliance with the Clean Water Act. The agency is doing a good job tackling increased threats from fire and climate change. Isn't our drinking water just as worthy? Thank you.
Up next, Sam Krupp.
Hi there. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today and for your service, your important work on the board. My name is Samantha Krupp. For the record, I'm the coalition's coordinator with the Forest Waters Coalition, representing over 20 conservation organizations and waterkeepers. We have many reasons to be hopeful, I think, in light of the recent private forest accord agreement. And I want to offer extensive gratitude to all of those who put in so much labor and time to reach this historic point. My comments today, however, will be focusing on something that's not explicitly addressed in that agreement, which is drinking water. While over 80% of Oregonians get their drinking water from forested watersheds, our state's municipal drinking water supplies are still less protected than our fish-bearing streams, for instance. Ongoing clear-cut logging practices increase sedimentation and reduce summer stream flow in these drinking water supplies, and associated herbicide applications do further pollute them with harmful chemicals. Due to the lack of time, I won't get into all of the ample science here, but have cited many of these independent peer-reviewed studies in my written comments, which I'll provide to the board. Many municipalities across Oregon, especially in our coastal communities, are mostly owned by private timberland, private timber owners, and are currently paying the price of decades of industrial logging in their drinking watersheds. One example in Willamina, Hampton Lumber is by far the biggest landowner in their drinking watershed, followed by Weyerhaeuser. Due to insufficient protections from our state's forested drinking watersheds, over 55% of Willamina's drinking watershed was clear cut in just the past 20 years. And as a result, that community is exploring moving their drinking water intake. Many other communities around Oregon are experiencing similar issues, including Rockaway Beach, Corbett, and Wheeler, just to name a few. And sadly, despite the body of science-backed and place-based evidence, historically, the Oregon Department of Forestry has failed to acknowledge the connection between industrial logging and drinking water degradation. In fact, the agency has not sufficiently studied the relationship and has failed to even conduct analyses of a range of alternatives that could better protect our drinking watersheds. Thank you for the time. My ask today is to please move forward in a productive direction with this encouraging new leadership on the board and place a moratorium on aerial sprays in drinking watersheds while more analysis can be done of the impacts of industrial logging in those critical and priceless drinking watersheds. Thank you.
Up next, Ms. Arkin. Lisa Arkin.
Hello, my name is Lisa Arkin. I serve as Executive Director of Beyond Toxics. I was going to share my screen because we have maps to show you, but I hope that you can access them on your data server. In September, we presented findings to the board summarizing herbicide applications on Oregon State Forest. Today, we present a case study created using data from ferns depicting pesticide applications in the Nehalem watershed. Our purpose is to help the board, the staff, and the public visualize where pesticide sprays are taking place and their close proximity to important fish-bearing streams. We ask the board to call for an immediate evaluation of the full range of impacts of aerial herbicide applications in state forests on drinking water quality and essential fish habitat. The first map, if you're able to look at it, shows the whole Nehalem watershed. It includes portions of the Astoria, Forest Grove, and Tillamook districts. Overall, many pesticide applications were made in this critical watershed, but our data shows that from 2015 to present, 82 sprays fell within a half mile of the river, totaling 1,925 total acres within one half mile of the main stem on steep slopes. There are two rectangles that indicate areas where we did smaller case studies. The first case study, we are looking at the portion of the Forest Grove District containing the headwaters of the Nehalem River. Within a half mile, there were 478 acres sprayed with herbicides on steep slopes, 42 of these aerial sprays. And the last map shows a lower third of the Nehalem River. Again, there were 19 sprays within a half mile of the main stem. 70% of these were aerial sprays. Next, Beyond Toxics water quality intern Jenna Travers will share which fish species are present in the Nehalem and the impacts they face as a result of these pesticide applications. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Up next, Jenna Travers.
Hello, my name is Jenna Travers and I'm the water quality intern for Beyond Toxics. To build on Lisa's presentation, I'd like to share with you some research I've compiled on the department's use of pesticides in state forests and related impacts to important fish habitat. So after application, pesticides can easily enter rivers and streams due to high mobility in soil, drift, and deposition. Once in the streams, they can affect fish and salmon in many different ways. Certain pesticides reduce the olfactory system of juvenile salmon, which juveniles use to sense predators and eventually navigate back to their birth streams as adults. And pesticides can also make it difficult or impossible for juvenile salmon to adapt to saline environments when they travel downstream and enter the ocean. Other impacts include a disruption in swimming and predator avoidance, fin deformities, and smaller size, which all make it harder to survive. In addition to the known effects of single chemicals, tank mixtures of pesticides that are used often haven't been tested in their combined states. so their true toxicity on fish and aquatic organisms remains unknown. Studies have found mixtures lead to synergistic effects and higher rates of unpredicted mortality. Basically, these chemicals combine to create a soup-like mixture of toxins that weaken the immune systems of salmon, disrupt their endocrine system, and increase population mortality rates. The Nehalem River is the largest wild fish-only river on the Oregon coast. It is home to several runs of salmon, including one of the healthiest runs of Oregon coast coho. Oregon coast coho are a federally threatened species of salmon that have key spawning habitat in this basin. Based on the data obtained from the Fern system, the large majority of the department's pesticide sprays in the area take place in the summer. So steelhead juveniles will be hit hard since that's when they emerge, and summer Chinook spawn right at the end, so their egg development will be affected as well. The biggest effects will be on coho, cutthroat trout, and steelhead, which all spend 1 to 2 years in the Nehalem as juveniles and will thus be exposed to these toxins for longer than other species that migrate downstream immediately, such as chum. In closing, we urge you to place a moratorium on aerial herbicide sprays in the watersheds and initiate a comprehensive study of their impact to key fish habitat and drinking water. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this morning.
Up next is Joseph Yearn.
Chair Kelly, State Forester, and members of the board. My name is Joseph Yearn. I speak today on behalf of the Audubon Society of Lincoln City and Salem Audubon Society. Our members and leadership ask the board and State Forester to reject attempts to lock Oregon State Forests into a definition of greatest permanent value that is grounded in the past, narrowly defined, and justified only through economic self-interest. Oregon Revised Statute defines GPD as healthy, productive, and sustainable forest ecosystems that over time and across the landscape provide a full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits to the people of Oregon. Oregon Administrative Rule directs the State Forester to manage for 6 specific benefits. We support forest management for all of these benefits. We are not opposed to the production of forest products, recognizing that they are essential to our current existence. But we take great exception to constant and consistent testimony from entities with vested financial interests that timber production must be the only benefit. The statute makes it very clear that timber production is not exclusive, but must be pursued within a broader management context. The rule is not tied to a definition formed decades in the past, but instead anticipates the needs to look to the future. No one can claim with any credibility that current conditions would argue for continuing to conduct business as usual. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Up next is Lauren Anderson.
Chair Kelly, members of the board, for the record, my name is Lauren Anderson, and I'm the Forest Climate Policy Coordinator with Oregon Wild. I'm testifying today to ask that the board adopt the Climate Change and Carbon Plan and continue to prioritize Oregon's forests as a critical climate solution. I very much appreciate that you've been prioritizing climate smart forestry, natural climate solutions, and environmental justice within the Climate Change and Carbon Plan and the Western Forest Management Plan. Incorporating climate change into your planning documents is very much in line with managing Oregon's forests for their greatest permanent value, to provide a full range of social, economic, and environmental benefits. Taking action to address the climate crisis is not only consistent with managing for greatest permanent value, it is fundamental to ensuring the long-term well-being of Oregonians and the resources we depend on. Our communities, watersheds, and wildlife are being impacted by the worsening impacts of climate change, and our forests offer the ability to sequester carbon from the atmosphere and store it for decades in the landscape, mitigating future impacts. Oregon's temperate rainforest represents some of the most carbon-rich landscapes in the world, and ODF has a critical role to play in demonstrating what ambitious, visionary, climate-smart forest policy looks like in Oregon and the United States. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
To close us out today, please have Claire Clock join us.
Chair Kelly and members of the board, for the record, I'm Claire Clock. My wife, Beverly, and I live on a small farm and Forested Acreage in Corbett, Oregon. I have, it's been a long time since I've addressed the Board of Forestry, and you have four new board members, so welcome to the new board members. We'll look forward to hearing from you in the future. I would like to express my optimism that after reading the bios of the new board members and the experience with the former board members, that we now have a board that will put Oregon Forest first in multiple use and not just timber. In the past, the board has subjugated ecosystem services, fisheries, wildlife, and recreation to a minimal role in the state forest. I see that changing. While maintaining the timber production, state, federal, and forest are the last bastions of late Cyril Stage forest. I look forward to having the state forest as a more integral part of the ecosystem rather than just forest production. I thank you for your hard work and look forward to hearing about the climate change today. The Forest Accord was a surprise and a very pleasant surprise. But as was mentioned, we have to get it through the legislature, and we'll be working in that sense. Thank you much, and appreciate the opportunity to talk. Bye-bye.
Thank you, testimony providers. We really appreciate your participation today. You are welcome to stay in the Zoom meeting for the remainder of this item. However, we just ask that you remain muted and disengage your video. Thank you. Chair Kelly and members of the board, this concludes our public testimony portion for item one.
Okay, thank you, Hillary.